You're listening to Money Talks. My name is Michael Campbell. Money Talks is brought to you by Solera Club. Solera Club is a royalty-based investment, which means in the investment world that you're first in line to get paid, and there are no fees attached to it. And you can find out, it's in the tech industry, by the way, but you can find out more information by going to SoleraClub.com. Today we're featuring the music of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and my challenge to you is see if you cannot tap your toes to that stuff, but we'll be hearing more Earth, Wind, and Fire as we go through the show. Today, though, I'm starting with a quote by Bertrand Russell. The opinions that are held with passion are always those for which no good ground exists. Indeed, the passion is the measure of the holder's lack of rational conviction. Opinions in politics and religion are almost always held passionately. I certainly say amen to that. So today I am starting with that quote, but I have a question for you and a warning. Have you noticed how many of our public debates are now dominated by absolutists, by extremists? They feature a black and white version of the world that's totally incompatible with the complexity we deal with. I mean, there's so many examples. I mean, front and center, you have to look at Donald Trump, and he's got an absolutely unnuanced view of world trade or why U.S. manufacturing jobs are lost. Look at virtually every debate on the environment, from global warming, where there's no questions allowed to the climate change agenda. No questions are considered legitimate. This is an amazing transformation of our freedoms. The current opposition to pipelines isn't about the Trans Mountain expansion. It's really about all pipelines. It's an absolutist view. Look at the blatant assault on free speech that's being pushed by extremists. I mean, they even resort to violence to prevent opposing views from being heard. As I say, that list just keeps on growing. It's obvious to anyone who wants to pay attention. Here's one for you. Maybe it just got passed over. In Ottawa, two young girls were not allowed, to have a lemonade stand last summer. So now the National Capital Commission is allowing children to open a lemonade stand on what are called Sunday bike days in Ottawa this summer, provided, though, that the kids and their parents get a permit and they sign a 3-page agreement that includes 15 separate conditions. This for a lemonade stand. But I want you to think about the mindset that thinks that getting a 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old to sign a 3-page agreement to set up a lemonade stand is the way to go. It's absolutely mind-blowing. But we're seeing that reflected in so many different areas of our lives. No wonder, by the way, small business owners spend an average of 842 hours per year complying with regulations. If that's not extreme, I'm not sure what is. You know, in Vancouver, you got a national pastime happening out in Vancouver, which is complaining about affordable housing. Yet few people bat an eye that it takes 21 months to get through, on average, to get through the approval process in Vancouver. 21 months. And it adds about $80,000 to the price of the average new condo. If that's not extremism. Yet few people rarely mention it even. You know, when you come to the investment markets, one of the real keys is to identify when different movements have gone to extremes. It could be on the bottom, it could be on the top. And the reason is they come back to the old law of physics. I think it's Newton's third law, which is for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's why there's so much concern about bubbles, housing market being the most common right now. But we've seen it in stock market bubbles, in specific sectors, whether it's tech, that kind of thing. Well, you try and identify those moves because you're looking for an equal and opposite reaction. But those moves are also a result of extremism. I think people understand that. I'll give you one other quick example because we've all observed it. If you boil water, it comes to an extreme at 100 degrees centigrade. And then what happens? It reverses. And it first turns to steam and then back to water. We look for these major reversal points. But what's difficult for some people to happen is they happen in society itself. I see it in politics all the time. That's what I think we're seeing when I analyze Europe. And we've consistently said on this show that we're in an anti-establishment movement. And I might add, that sounds cliched right now, but not when we first started talking about it. not when we talked about Brexit, not when we talked about Donald Trump. And I think this is a long-term trend that doesn't have to go in a direct straight line, but it's going to do it over time. But it's all about identifying extremes. And all I'm pointing out is this is what's happening in society in general. Now, some people say, what's your point? What's the problem? Well, there's nothing to say to those people. They actually are comfortable with an assault on free speech. They actually think that we should have no pipelines, no matter how impractical that is, coming from the same people who use petroleum products. They think there should be no questioning, not just the global warming agenda, but the whole progressive agenda. No questions allowed. It's all about being absolutist, about extremism. And they'll say, what's your point? But if you're not one of these people, this is a warning. You have to push back. Otherwise, you're going to wake up and find things so dramatically changed in society, maybe in ways you don't like. And one more thing, they're coming after your money. And the more successful you are, the more hours you spend working, the more degrees you have, the more in-demand skills, those same people want your money, and they'll take it to an extreme. Money Talks is brought to you by Solera Club. Solera Club is a royalty-based investment in the tech sector. More information, go to SoleraClub.com. Stay with me. I got Michael Levy on deck here. He has got a ton of stuff to talk about, but I'm telling you, I'm going to start with the Bank of Canada for Mike. Plus, Eamon Piercy is back with us. Looking forward to it. Some great, great advice for graduates, whether it's university or high school. All of that coming your way on Money Talks. I know Michael Levy is tapping his toe right now listening to the great Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's who we're featuring throughout the show today. Also, we'll be featuring John Johnson. Very looking forward to this guy. This guy is the man who Money Talks, who several years ago came on. It was October, I think, of 2012. And he said, you know, bottom line, the Canadian dollar isn't just falling a little bit here. It's going to drop right back into from par down to the 70-cent level. I remember when he was on the air going, wow, and that certainly had my thinking going even further down than I was suspecting at that point. He'll be my guest. I am looking forward to saying what's next for that. But right now, I got to bring back on Michael Levy. Hey, Mike, I got so many things to chat with you about today, but one of the things, I love to start with a little good news, and boy, those employment numbers were good in May.
Well, Mike, the employment numbers were actually fantastic in May. They were blockbuster. We grew jobs by 54,500. That alone is a significant number, but when you peel back the onion, and which we do, the jobs were good jobs. They added 77,000 jobs in the private sector. That's what we like to hear, is private sector jobs, not public sector. And youth employment, which we rarely hear about except bad news, particularly out of Europe, but bad news, they and it's usually a laggard, they gained 38,200 jobs. And that shows you the vibrance of the workforce, at least in some areas of Canada.
Yeah, let me come back to something here. I want to talk about a couple of things. One is we got great GDP numbers in the first quarter, 3.7%, but it looks like it's going to continue on. And you know what's interesting is Canada's economy is moving better than the U.S., but you rarely hear about it.
You do rarely hear about it. And, Mike, I think what is really bothering me, and I think about it often, is Stephen Poloz, Bank of Canada, and the way they talk about and warn about a debt bubble, both mortgage debt because of very low mortgage rates, but also people getting themselves into non-mortgage debt. In fact, non-mortgage debt is growing quite significantly, Mike. And what we've got to look at is the bank's reticent to raise interest rates. Stephen Poloz, in the statements that come from the Bank of Canada, keeps warning about the fragility of our economy, of the growth. Yet, as you say, we are outpacing the U.S., and the bank just seems so hesitant to bring the rates up even a quarter of 1%. Mike, I don't think that our economy is on that kind of tenter hooks that a quarter of 1% or even one quarter of 1% raises is going to knock us off the rails.
Yeah, let's sure as heck hope that's the case. But you're making a great point here. But maybe that's just a clear warning that Again, Mr. Polis has been clear. He wasn't looking to raise rates until the first quarter of, into next year, 2018. But maybe this is just a little precursor that maybe they may bump them a little sooner. But your point's well taken, Mike. I mean, 0.25% isn't going to bump anybody.
Mike, no, it's not. And if I might, the last 0.25% drops that the Bank of Canada brought rates down were emergency cuts. And this was almost the phraseology he used because of the devastation of the oil market. And they were very afraid at that time, and I think rightfully so, about the precarious way the Canadian economy was acting. But if you use the word emergency, we are not in an emergency anymore when you look at all the economic numbers. So I think that he could take back that 0.5% drop in twice. In other words, do one mm-hmm. quarter raise, do another quarter raise, and at least get us back to normal.
Yeah, it's going to be very fascinating as we go forward here. And as I say, one of the things, I guess, maybe if NAFTA clears up or the softwood lumber, whatever, then we'll finally get that bump. But I guess that's what he's looking for. But Mike, one other aspect I want to get to you with is that every week, and you've been chronicling this for years, but look at the retail stuff. It keeps developing. I read a report this week that said 22 major U.S. retailers are now sort of in the gray area of potential bankruptcy. It's incredible what's going on in the retail sector.
Well, just as you were talking about Money Talks being on the leading edge of the Canadian dollar going down and to put some money in the U.S., actually a significant amount, we've been chronicling what's going on in retail, Mike, in detail since Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving last year. So we're talking just about 7 or almost 8 months of this, so it's no surprise, but the mainstream media is now starting to pick up on it. And here we go again, the Hudson's Bay. After a month ago saying that they're not going to meet their targets and talking about cuts, their loss in this quarter climbed to $221 million from $97 million last year, and they're now cutting another 2,000 jobs. They're looking for an additional $350 million in savings this year, and they expect to take almost a $100 million charge against the company. Well, Mike, they aren't standing alone in this. They're the beacon of what's going on, as are Macy's, as are our JCPenney, as is Kmart, and you can go across the board with either bad results or store closures, which, and we talked about this last week, will extrapolate into mall closures and shopping center closures in the months and years to come, because you can't have this kind of bricks and mortar retail failing without shopping centers and malls being affected.
Just one quick comment on that, Mike. Have you noticed that you've got nobody standing up and saying the government should bail out that sector? You know, when you think of other sectors that are under the gun like that, and we've certainly seen them, especially back east, the auto sector jumps out at me right away, Bombardier with all their money. But it is interesting. If you're not a favored group, well, look out. The government ain't there to help you.
Oh, Mike, they're not. But one last interesting fact. Dell Computers some years ago was showing bad results quarter after quarter, and Michael Dell, in order to get Dell out of the quarterly spotlight, took the company private again. Therefore, they do not have to do, they're not pressured into quarterly results, into reporting a better quarter and into reporting good numbers all the time. Nordstrom is talking, the company itself is talking about taking their company private too. And of all the major retailers in the U.S. and Canada, Nordstrom seems to be doing better than others.
Fascinating stuff, Mike. We'll chat with you next week. Have a great weekend.
You too, Mike. Thanks.
Eamon Percy on deck here. How about some great advice for someone who's just graduating out of high school? You've got a kid, you've got a grandson, granddaughter, it might be a niece, a nephew. Also, it could be the same for getting out of university. Well, he's written a book, The 1% Solution. It's great stuff. He'll give us some advice when we come back. Eamon Percy is the author of the book, The 1% Solution, How Daily Small Improvements Produce Massive Long-Term Results. This is the kind of thing I wish we would help our students with, our kids with. It's something you can do by buying the book or chatting with them about these things. But really, the art of getting things done, the art of, as he says, massive long-term results just by small daily improvements. Eamon Percy joins me on the line right now. Eamon, let's get right to it. I asked you when we were booking you to come on the show for the next couple of weeks to just give me a couple of specifics that people could take and discuss maybe with kids or younger people, millennials, can listen to and say, okay, I'm going to enact that.
Mike, great to be back on your show, and I'm particularly thrilled because this is exactly why I wrote the book, to help young people and help them through the extremes in the economy that you were talking about earlier so they can build great careers over a long time. So thank you very much for having me back on your show.
Well, let's start with a couple of things.
Sure. There's two habits right out of the book. Habit 27, with respect to work for kids, what I recommend is that they do work that they enjoy and follow the money. So they often get the advice about just being passionate about your work, which is important. But given the volatility of the world that we're working in, that we're moving towards, I strongly believe that young grads should start doing both work that they enjoy and pursue paths that ultimately will help them produce great income and great wealth. And over a long period of time, it won't happen overnight. I understand the stresses they're going through. But over a long period of time, that's how they can build a great, great career. And I document that in the book.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things we hear so regularly from people who've spent all that money, you know, borrowed, they've got student loans, et cetera, they come out of university and they have no marketable skills. Mm-hmm. You know, they find out there's not a job market, and there's lots of areas we can go. I could be sarcastic about it, but it's a serious subject. So, yeah, and I, that's why I love you say, follow the money. What are you going to do with this? Follow stuff you like, but also start getting realistic about it. You want to, in the end, have it result in employment, gainful employment.
That's exactly it. And I can use the key word, which is skills as opposed to talent. So the next habit I'd like to talk about is habit 28. And to me, the most important advice I could give a young person out of high school or university is that they do have to create those unique, valuable, and enduring skills. Skills that create value in the marketplace so that over a long, long period of time, they're bringing something to the market that creates value. And to me, I think those skills should be things that are transferable. So as the economy changes and as the world changes, as you document very well on your show, those transferable skills around leadership, around sales, around financial understanding of the world are able to help them build these great long-term careers. But it really is about that toolkit of fantastic skills that they need going into the marketplace.
Yeah, and I just see, you know, people have got to get realistic about this. This is going to be a monstrous challenge for young people. Hey, and I might add, you can go to Amazon.ca and you can get the book, The 1% Solution. But here's something, Eamon just also, he's not mentioning it, but I'm going to, walks the walk, because when you look at some of the profits, they're going to go to STEM student scholarships. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fantastic thing. I mean, everyone can have a chance to do their little part, but I would really recommend, you know, having these conversations. That's what the book will do for you. It'll spur a conversation with your kids. Don't look for the school system to do it. Don't look for the great gestalt to do it. No, get aggressive with it. You know, get the book, and then you can just discuss it. And Eamon, I'm going to get you back next week because there's so much more to go on this topic, but that's great stuff. Do work you enjoy, follow the money, create a unique value and enduring skill set. All great advice. I'll take a break. John Johnson coming on deck with me. Also a quote of the week, and I got a shocking stat. All of that coming your way. You're right here on the Money Talks Network.